KALW.
He took her blood pressure every time she went in, and that was pretty much about it.
Dementia is a common disease, but it's often overlooked in many non-white communities. Researchers are studying the reasons why.
We need to be at the table. If you don't participate in research, then you can't get the culturally tailored programs and treatments that you would want.
And for the Vietnamese community, language and cultural barriers make dementia care even tougher.
Okay, Daddy, you live to 100. I'm going to die early.
Today, the mental and physical toll dementia has on patients and their adult children. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, so today we're re-airing an award-winning documentary by Christine Nguyen. Christine is a physician, and she was in KALW's Audio Academy, class of 2018. Just before she joined our newsroom, Hurricane Harvey made landfall in Houston, Texas. That's where her father lived. At the time, he was barely getting by on his own, and the hurricane was the final straw. Houston hospitals were a mess, and the nursing homes were slammed. After the hurricane, in-home care in Houston didn't work. Christine had a hard time finding dementia care. What made it even harder was that she wanted care that acknowledged their Vietnamese culture, and she couldn't find it. This is her story.
There is Harvey right now making landfall. The National Hurricane Center in their 10 o'clock update said the storm just now made landfall.
It was August 24th, 2017. One day before Hurricane Harvey, a Category 4 hurricane would hit Houston and dump more water than any storm ever recorded in U.S. history. In just a few days, Houston got as much rain as it usually saw in a year. My brother picked up our dad, who was 82 at his house where he lived alone, and they evacuated to higher ground.
But over 15, 18 inches of rain.
Everyone is kind of taking cover, you know, sitting on towels.
They rode out the storm in the countryside. My brother's in-laws had gotten 10 pounds of ground beef and made enough chili to last through the storm. This is Texas, y'all.
The Viet Cong flag is flying over the presidential palace in Saigon today, just a few hours after the South Vietnamese government announced its unconditional surrender. We now have films of the emergency evacuation effort from Saigon, which took place just before the surrender. Kevin Delaney reports.
Exploding shells and small arms fire provided a constant background for the arrival of group after group.
My brother said Dad seemed disoriented when he evacuated. You know, Dad didn't eat, he told me later. He just read the news on his iPad. In the bathroom, Dad crapped on the floor, and at night he paced, yelling to himself. My brother listened through the wall, just like when we were kids. I felt bad for my sister-in-law, embarrassed. A week after they evacuated, Dad insisted on being dropped off back at his house. He'd be fine. He had a case of Ensure. But a few days later, when my brother came to check on him, Dad didn't answer. The news blared through the door.
For the fourth straight day, the storm that just won't go away dumped yet more water on a state still reeling. Nearly 7,000 people have been rescued.
There they are.
Oh, my goodness. We're coming to get you. Oh, my goodness.
First responders and volunteers alike racing against rising floodwaters.
Oh, look, she's hugging Jeff.
I know, my goodness.
Trying to reach thousands of trapped families in Houston and the surrounding areas. Coast Guard baskets hoisting.
I texted my brother information from the Alzheimer's Association. I'd had a sinking feeling about Dad for a long time, and even though I'm a doctor, I hadn't been able to face up to it. Dad had dementia, and if he stayed at home, he would die. My brother brought him to the emergency room, and Dad got admitted to the intensive care unit. He was 86 pounds.
The Red Cross estimates that over 17,000 people in and around Houston will attempt to fall asleep tonight in a makeshift bed, wondering about their homes and even the safety of family members.
People clearly show the emotional and physical strain of the recent weeks.
I'd finally connected the dots. When someone has dementia, a change from routine can make them worse. Experts call it transfer trauma. Maybe the evacuation from Hurricane Harvey reminded him of that last day of April 1975 when he refused to leave Vietnam on American rescue airlifts.
Just before the communists entered Saigon, one government police colonel walked to an army memorial statue at the National Assembly, saluted it, then fatally shot himself.
My family had thought that evacuating Dad from Hurricane Harvey would make him safer. And from a purely physical perspective, he was. But the transfer trauma from the move increased his overall chance of dying by 3 times. To this day, my family hardly talks about Dad's dementia. And although it's the top diagnosis in older adults, most families and doctors don't recognize it. And Asians have a higher incidence of dementia than the general population.
Tên tôi là Vương Quốc Quả, nhưng mà là thành ra Bốc Quả Vương.
My name is Quyen Vương. My dad's name is Vương Quốc Quả. And when he became U.S. citizen, he changed his name to Bob Vương. He was so proud that he was taking it after Bob Hope.
Quyen lays a check, one of those absorbent blue pads on a dining chair for him to sit on.
Ông già tôi chết thì tôi mới có 11 tuổi thôi.
Yeah, he gets emotional. And sometimes he laughs, but he looks like he cries.
Mẹ tôi đã dẫn mới có 11 tuổi về xin ông bác ông giúp đỡ. Nhưng mà ông bác, ông nói tôi là giáo sư, nhưng mà giáo sư nghèo.
Quyên's father holds a necklace of beads and recites his daily prayers to Buddha.
Nam mô Đà Lạt Thành Di Lạc Tôn Phật. Nam mô Đà Lạt Thành Di Lạc Tôn Phật.
So when he chants like that, it helps him calm down. But it also, you notice that he's counting too, because that helps him keep his mind sharp. There's a lot of repeating. It's like a broken record, you know. It goes back to that groove and it plays that part.
Namo Ajita Va, Namo Ajita Va, Namo Ajita Va, Namo Ajita Va.
A few years ago, when Bob got more and more combative, his family chalked up his erratic behavior to his personality and his position in the family.
I didn't know dementia coming on. I thought it was just like, you know, him being himself. His usual self was he was very demanding, very authoritative, like, you know, always like a nag, like snap at people. And of course, you know, he's the oldest child in the family. So then when he did that, I got really angry because, you know, it seems to me like he was just bullying me. He tried to get his things his way, the way he has always been doing all these years.
When she went on doctor's visits with him, Quyen didn't get much information.
The doctor never officially called it dementia, but she just say that, yeah, old age, you know, he probably has dementia. But to me, there was no official diagnosis. So we just assume, we just kind of think of dementia as old age, senility.
After Alzheimer's disease, strokes are the second most common cause of dementia. Bob had had a stroke, but Quyen said her doctor never spelled out the connection.
My name is Wayne Meyer, and I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at UC Davis.
Meyer says that when a dementia diagnosis gets delayed or never even happens, patients miss out on interventions.
I'll just speak from my own experience in dealing with primary care and what we face dealing with my mom with dementia and going through the healthcare system. She had an older Vietnamese doctor who I would say that, you know, he took her blood pressure every time she went in, and that was pretty much about it.
When her family told the doctor Meyer's mom was having memory problems, the doctor shrugged it off.
Oh, you know, I think she's fine.
As a researcher in health disparities, Meyer knew she had to push to get her mom to see a neurologist.
There was concern on her part about offending her doctor, not wanting to hurt his feelings or question his authority.
Asking questions is important because there are risk factors you can change. For instance, with my dad, there were plenty of things that put him at risk for dementia. Like a lot of Vietnamese men, he had been a smoker. Fortunately, he had quit years ago, but despite being athletic and thin, he still had high blood pressure and heart disease, both strong risk factors for dementia. A study this year from the American Heart Association shows Asian Americans die sooner from heart disease and stroke than whites. Among Asians, Vietnamese are one of the two subgroups who suffer the most from strokes.
country.
In Saigon, a U.S. military spokesman said today more than 700 enemy troops were killed last week in that sensitive border area. Throughout all of South Vietnam, the enemy lost a total of 2,689 soldiers.
For years, to save money, Dad took only half his heart medications. He rarely went farther than the mailbox, and even then he got out of breath. Indoors, he cranked up the TV and watched sports, drawing the drapes and turning off the lights to shut out Houston's brutal summer. Air conditioning is expensive. Like a lot of older persons living alone, he was isolated. So after he recovered from his hospital stay, my family decided a nursing home was the right place for him to live. He needed 24-hour care.
According to a Veterans Administration study, half of the Vietnam combat veterans suffer from what psychiatrists call post-traumatic stress disorder. Many vets complain of alienation, rage, or...
When American vets returned from Vietnam, a lot of them had paranoia and flashbacks. The Vietnam vet experience defined PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. We now know vets with PTSD are more likely to develop dementia. But there hasn't been much study of Vietnamese PTSD. The available research shows it's common among Vietnamese who went through the war.
None of them received a hero's welcome.
Gwen, who's taking care of her father, Bob, remembers the peak of the war. The entire extended family of over 30 hid in her grandparents' house.
We were sleeping in the middle of the night, and there would be shooting or bombing, and then we would just, we run so fast, we would run downstairs and we hide under the big bed that they make, and kind of like this, they stack a lot of sandbags.
Gwen fled Vietnam on a boat when she was 16.
I was what they call unaccompanied minor.
Her father and older siblings had already left the country. She was in charge of escorting her little brother.
The order of priority is that boys go first and older children go first.
She was one of the lucky ones who survived the ocean trip. Almost 500,000 so-called boat people died at sea. Yet at the peak of the refugee crisis, two-thirds of Americans didn't want the Vietnamese in the U.S. One of the worries was that they would suck up social services. There was even talk about Asian diseases and drugs. In part to prove their worth, Vietnamese have internalized the desire to be good minorities. Gwen's dad rejected programs that would stigmatize him as a societal burden.
He doesn't believe in, he doesn't like to receive welfare.
Officially, the Vietnam War lasted about 20 years. Over 3 million Vietnamese died. The anniversary of Black April, the day Saigon became Ho Chi Minh City, is a day of mourning for expatriates. Gwen's father relives the end of his nation like it was yesterday.
He was talking about all the bad things that the communists did to him. I understand his needs to express himself, but it's a broken record, and at time, I just couldn't take it. And he was like, no, you are communist. You communist. I said, why are you calling me communist? One of the hardest thing about living with him with dementia is that when, you know, there's still so much hatred, unhealed wounds from the war inside. So there are times, there are days that he would wake up and he got really angry because of some news he heard on the radio the day before. So he would be screaming and shouting, Thay Thiên Hành Đạo, you know, on behalf of representing God, I'm just going to punish them. And times like that, it's just so hard on himself and on me too, because it's so much negativity.
Caregivers of people with dementia are hidden patients. The stress causes biological changes that makes the caregivers more prone to health problems and shortens their lifespans.
I'm risking my health, and thank God that I'm divorced. Because if I'm not, I don't think any married man would be able to put up with taking care of the father-in-law like this.
When Gwen started taking care of her father, she felt trapped.
He's a very charming man. At first, he promised me the moon. And by the time he came here, it's like, I didn't say such thing. I didn't promise you anything.
Taking care of her dad was a series of small daily battles.
One day, I was telling him that I smell something, and so you need to change your diaper. And he said, no, I am clean. I'm cleaner than you.
Daughterly duty became resentment. And when her dad announced he wanted to live to 100, she answered,
okay, Daddy, you live to 100. I'm going to die early.
Taking care of her father was one of the toughest challenges of her life, but she kept her problems to herself.
Because it's so hard to talk to the siblings, you know. The cultural expectation is just so heavy, but it never seemed enough.
Gwen's story is familiar to me.
I'm doing my work.
I go to Houston regularly to visit and care for my dad. I keep my expectations low, which is the best way to avoid frustration. First step, do a sweep of his room, removing the 3 months of hoarded napkins and saltines stuffed in socks. Throw out wet diapers he's hung up to reuse. He hates my organizing attempts. He says he's got everything in its place.
No, put the lip into it there.
Dumping his stuff seems mean, but I don't want him to trip and fall or get sick from rotten food. I've been ashamed to admit my father's in a nursing home. It looks like the easy way out. But for a while, he seemed to do better. His nursing home posts an activity calendar so you can picture the residents doing chair yoga or playing bingo. But mostly, everyone just sits and waits. Dad usually sits in the dining room alone, waiting an hour to get his Salisbury steak and mashed potatoes. He started to stay in his room during meals. Food costs extra here, he tells me. It's pointless explaining to him that it's a package deal. And his weight slid back down.
Subway?
Subway.
You want Subway? Not Jack in the Box?
Subway, that's right.
You want Subway? Not Jack in the Box?
Huh?
Not Jack in the Box?
Okay,
Jack in the Box. Okay, you want Subway? You want Subway, okay. Fries?
When your dad, who's 5'8", drops down to 86 pounds, healthy food isn't even an issue. You want maximum calories. So when I visit, we go to Jack in the Box, Popeyes, Burger King.
Combo has a drink.
Combo.
Do you want a drink?
Yeah.
Too? What kind of drink?
I agree with
that. Okay, you want that though? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the price is. Hi, yeah, can I get a spicy chicken sandwich?
We buy lotto tickets. He's an old pro. He's still mad my brother lost his $4 million winning ticket.
It's $2 now.
No.
It says $2
now. Bobo.
Yeah, it's
$2 now. The price went up.
Now change it?
Dad insists on walking when he goes outside, but back inside his nursing home, he collapses in his wheelchair, whistling his breath through pursed lips.
I'm very tired because I can't get out of the building.
I get tired. I can't get out.
Like a jail, like a prison.
It's like a jail, like a prison. That's so hard to hear. In 1978, the new Vietnamese government forced my family into what they called a re-education camp. It was a prison. One day, my brother and I, our heads freshly shaven to control lice, went to Dad's cell. He was packed in an 8x8-foot box with so many other men, they had to take turns lying down. Through the bars, we gave Dad the banana we'd gotten as a prize.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, hi, dinner.
I don't know. Oh. I love you all. My kind of.
He got you ramen.
No.
Tell Grandpa what is it? Ramen.
No.
And what else you got? We got you biscotti.
On a recent visit to Houston, Dad asked me to drive by his house. The one he'd almost died alone in. I felt awkward going past it, like I had taken his home away from him. We'd had a long day. Popeye's fried chicken, Lens Crafters. To finish, I'd gotten him a frozen taro drink from 85C Bakery. 500 calories. Taro is a popular flavor in Southeast Asia, and his eyes flashed when the straw brought the purple shake to his lips. There was just a little drink left in the cup holder. Dad's left eyelid doesn't close completely, an old injury, so I wasn't sure if he was asleep. Then he reached out to me and patted me on the arm. to acknowledge that he knew I'd made an effort. In my investigation into dementia caregiving for Vietnamese people, I found only two researchers in California, where there's the biggest population of Vietnamese in the U.S. Van Park is an associate professor at UCSF and researches public health. She points out Asians are the fastest growing minority, but there's not enough research and manpower.
When you look at the National Centers for Alzheimer's Disease across the country, you know, I would say probably a percent or less are Asian Americans.
When Asians are mentioned at all in research, they're lumped into a single category that includes 30 different countries and over 100 different languages. It makes invisibility worse. There are over 2 million Vietnamese in the U.S. And when you break it down, factors like health literacy, income, and the ability to speak English are different and affect access to care.
We need to be at the table. If you don't participate in research, then you can't get the culturally tailored programs and treatments that you would want.
What's available is a cut-and-paste approach.
They would go to the Alzheimer's Association website, which has materials in Vietnamese, and unfortunately, the standard of care.
Research shows one of the best ways to manage dementia is to support the caregivers. But for Vietnamese caregivers,
if you frame it as focus on your own mental health and go get some respite care, and it's like, what are you talking about? And it looks from the outsider in as you're complaining.
She's trying to find culturally acceptable ways to reduce stress and depression. One way she's getting caregivers to open up is to use Korean dramas. Vietnamese caregivers can identify with the Asian faces and Asian themes of these K-dramas, which are a worldwide streaming phenomenon.
이모 갑자기 바쁜 일 생긴 거? 끝나면 아무 때나 전화 주세요.
In this scene from the series Bubblegum, an Asian doctor denies she's developing Alzheimer's. Then she's confronted by some of her symptoms. She's left ice cream melting in her desk. She forgets she's on a phone call when someone brings her a patient's chart. She doesn't even remember asking for the chart. Eventually, she agrees to get tested, but only if it's a secret.
다른 검사는 내일 밤에 다들 퇴근한 후에.
After watching the K-dramas together, Park's research participants became a support group for each other.
They were very talkative, like they could relate and they could understand. Everyone talked about the stigma and the shame as it relates to knowing.
This is unusual because Vietnamese don't usually go to support groups or participate in research.
How would this look if I participate? And what information are you getting from me? And so this comes back to the fear of authority and government. And what are you going to do with this information?
Recently, Park presented earlier research to Vietnamese in San Jose. Over 100 people came. Nguyen Vuong, who started out as a study participant, became the facilitator for the entire meeting.
Tức là người trầm cảm là cái người lúc nào nhìn cũng buồn phiền, rồi thì đau đầu, nhức đầu, đau vai, đau lưng.
Gwen says opening up about her struggles and participating in Park's research program have helped her.
Once I stopped feeling guilty, and then I stopped the resentment.
She's been able to turn to a regular Vietnamese women's support group, as well as her faith in Buddhism.
It helps me to practice compassion, that's one thing, but it also helps me to understand more about karma. And when I finally accept, okay, that's his karma. If the one day I have to send him to the nursing home, that's his karma. Nothing I can do about it because it is his karma and I've done all I could.
Karma. For now, my dad's still in a nursing home, despite my misgivings. On a recent trip, on our last night in Houston, my kids and I brought Dad pizza.
Oh. Hi, Grandpa.
Oh.
Here's the pizza.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you.
When I stepped away, my daughter recorded her grandpa. I won't include it here, but listening to the tape later, it was the most lucid conversation I'd heard in a long time. I was sad to have missed it, but was glad my kids saw a different side to him. When we left, I reminded him to keep eating.
뭐냐, 안냐?
말고. 어, 이거 할 거. Ba lần nữa.
Bố nhớ anh nhé. Mai thì anh theo nhé.
Nhưng khi nào con về đó có cho bố biết trước.
Được, tức là về con.
À, biết rồi. Nhưng mà không biết khi nào về đây đó.
Ok.
For Cross Currents, I'm Christine Nguyen.
Christine was a fellow in our audio academy. She produced that story as part of a fellowship with the Gerontological Society of America, Journalists Network on Generations, and the Silver Century Foundation. Christine's father died in late November 2019. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alastair Boone, James Rowlands, Gonady Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Mary Catherine O'Connor, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.